Good morning. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you along with us today as we talk about home renovation, repair, water, and inspection issues with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison. Ken, pleasure to see you again today.
Nice to see you too, Jim.
John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting at Fitchburg consults for historic restoration projects, water, and mold litigation, and is a Wisconsin registered home inspector. John, a pleasure to see you here once again.
Glad to be back.
And Larry Mueller is off watching and participating in a Wisconsin Public Radio tailgating adventure at Miller Park, where they'll be watching the Brewers play. And so while he's down having a good time, we'll be back here at the helm, and we'll be looking for your calls about your home renovation repair issues at 1-800-642-1234 and email at talk@wpr.org. Roger, he had emailed to ask, how do you properly measure a window to get the correct size when purchasing a replacement window? And Ken, you must have the answer on that.
Yeah, I do. There's a couple things. One is you want to know whether it's you're replacing the entire window or just an insert. And I'm assuming Roger means an insert. So you need the height and the width and the depth, three measurements. The way you measure the width is you measure it jamb to jamb. Now, if you opened your existing window and you look into the side of the window, if it's a really old-fashioned window, you'd see three pieces of small wood that create spaces that are little glides for the windows to operate. Those are called stops. And the outside one is an outside stop.
Okay.
Inside, and the center one is called a parting stop. It parts the two windows. If it's a newer window with a plastic side piece, that will end up having to come out, and you'd have to either allow for that measurement or take the stop out or the plastic jamb extension out. And then you measure jamb to jamb. What you do is you when you order the windows, you would either subtract a quarter of an inch, or you would tell them that this is the exact dimension, and then they will subtract it for you. So you have to make that very clear. I've had a couple windows show up that everybody assumed were the window sizes, but not necessarily. They ended up being the exact jamb size, so we had to fool around with them to make them work.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get the width, then the height is the issue, and where you measure from there is you measure what a lot of people call the window sill on the inside, where you put your beer can if you're leaning on a couch or something, and that's called a stool. And on the inside of the stool, the window frame the window frame sash slides down and hits the sill. That's
right.
Kind of an angular piece of wood, and you measure right there at that point, straight up to the jamb on the top, and that's your measurement there. Then the next thing you do is you measure the distance between the inside of the outside and inside stops. Once you get those three measurements, you've got it. Most window suppliers will come out for no charge and measure those for you.
Because they want to be absolutely
certain.
They
want to have to buy a window, so that's going to sit there and collect dust. So they will come out and measure for you, and it's usually worthwhile. Once you've seen it done once or twice, it's no-brainer, so have fun with it. But the first time, you might want to have somebody look at it. There's lots of websites out there that'll give you this information. None pop into my mind right now, but if you did a web search, you could find whatever you need.
Right. All right, let's take some calls. The lines are full at the moment. The number is 1-800-642-1234 as we talk with Ken Adams and John Freiberger. Let's go to Scott in Stoughton up first. Hi, Scott.
Hi, thank you. I have an old farmhouse, and it's poorly insulated. So to fix that, I'm considering putting some blue foam around the entire exterior of the house, and then I'm going to re-side, of course. Now then, at some point, I know because I spoke with a previous owner, insulation was blown into the stud cavities. However, I don't think they did a very good job, and perhaps that insulation settled because the house is pretty cold and drafty. I'm not sure if I want to actually blow cellulose into the stud cavities, even though I know it's a good opportunity when I'm preparing to re-side. I can do it from the outside. So I'm considering, like I said, just putting foam on the outside. And I just want to know what you think. Is that a good idea? What do you think?
It's a good idea, but I think you may as well maximize the improvement of your resistance to thermal flow by going ahead and blowing into those wall cavities as well. Do you know what year, Scott, that house was insulated? It wasn't back in the late 60s or early 70s, was it?
Yeah, probably was.
Okay. Well, what you may have in there, and you're going to want to find this out, is you might have urea formaldehyde foam. It was a yellow-brown foam. It was an early type of spray-in foam. They drilled holes and ran it in simply by locating one of the little plugs. You should be able to open it and see. And it shrank by at least 25% and created quite a mess. And you're going to have to determine whether you already have that in the walls, because if you have that in the walls, that's going to end up limiting what you can do as far as blowing in cellulose, unless it's totally crumbled and fallen to the bottom. One of the things to be very careful of is that you are going to be changing the drying characteristics of these walls completely. This house is no longer going to have a lot of heat going from the inside to the outside in the winter, drying out the wall cavities. So you're going to have to put a vapor barrier on all of the interior walls where they touch the exterior. And this can be done with a vapor barrier paint. And you're probably also going to want to foam and seal any electrical penetrations in that outside wall to reduce the migration of moisture into that wall. Because once you tighten up this wall, you don't want to end up with a bunch of mold and mildew growing in it. And on the exterior of the house, be sure to apply a good quality wind wrap, a commercial grade Tyvek or a double layer of felt or something like that to stop this draftiness. If you simply insulate and still have the draftiness, you're going to have a lot of air intrusion that's going to ruin your thermal resistance.
But won't the foam do the same thing as the Tyvek?
The foam will do the same thing as long as you tape all the joints, but considering what Tyvek costs, what I would do is I would insulate the interstitial spaces as best you can. I'd then wrap the entire house in Tyvek or felt, and then I'd put the foam over the top of it. That also then gives you a double water barrier. And you should select a foam that has tapeable seams so that you can tape all of the seams of the foam as well.
To make sure I understand, you're saying that if I don't have that vapor barrier on the inside of the walls, moisture will enter the wall and it will not be able to escape.
That is correct. And if you've got an old farmhouse, it might be balloon framed, which means you have no headers above the windows. The floors, the second floor, may be simply nailed to the studs. So if you start getting those nails rusting, you can end up with some real interesting structural problems. The Department of Interior Historic Restoration Division has specific specifications for historic houses. I know yours isn't on the State Register or the Federal Register, but still, you've got a historic house. And they require a contractor working on a historic house to provide an interior vapor barrier anytime we add insulation to the sidewalls. And that's based upon their experience with mold, mildew, deterioration, and structural damage due to condensation and air-carried moisture diffusion.
And it can be done simply with paint.
Yes, I know Glidden has one. Several of the paints are actually HUD certified. And in fact, I know in an earlier program there were some interior applied. It's just a heavy latex paint, and you could actually get a tax credit for it. I don't know whether that currently applies, but it's probably worth checking. But I know they did have HUD certify a bunch of these paints to get the federal tax credits during one of the past programs.
Is it possible to put enough foam on the outside that I keep the inside of the walls warm enough that water vapor doesn't reach the dew point?
No.
Is that not possible?
No, you're going to end up with a point in the wall, unless you're going to maybe add a foot in wall thickness to your house, where you are going to end up with condensation.
Ken, yeah. Something to add?
Oh, I was just going to say that. Are you going to insulate or side this yourself, Scott?
I beg your pardon?
Are you going to put the siding on yourself?
Yes, I am.
You want to be very, very careful about window flashings and door flashings. You're going to have to build out your jams. And I've seen people do it yourself, put extra insulation on the outside, and that's the weak link. So you want to make darn sure that your flashings are correct.
I plan to build out all the exterior trim so that it's beyond the face of the siding and then wrap it in tin.
Okay, and make sure that you have flashings on top of the window so no moisture could get behind that.
And good luck to you, Scott. Thanks very much for your call. Let's go to Jackie in Poissippi next. Hello, Jackie.
Hi. I would like to know how to remove and keep the moss off of my north-facing garage and house roof. They're asphalt roofs. They were done 10 years ago.
Okay. You can go to a roofing supplier, and you can get copper or zinc strips that you can place on the roof. These will slowly release zinc, and that will work as sort of an herbicide. The next time you re-roof, you can actually get shingles now that have these herbicidal granules right in the shingles themselves, and they're designed for these north side roofs that tend to grow things.
Yes, it is growing lots of things.
If you remember the old farmhouses, a lot of them had cedar roofs, and up on the ridge of the roof, they had a piece of sort of decorative galvanized metal. And that decorative galvanized metal wasn't there for looks. It was actually there for the zinc in the galvanizing to keep those wood shingles from decaying. Because every time it rained, a little bit of that galvanizing zinc would run down the roof and work as an herbicide.
Sounds great. I'm going to do it.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Jackie. We appreciate hearing from you. The number is 1-800-642-1234. We have an email here from Tad in Appleton, who said the people that owned the house before us had cats that used the basement as a large litter box. I've used enzymes and Nature's Miracle, which has helped, but with all of the rain, it still smells. And so the question is, what is the best way to seal the basement block walls and concrete floor?
Oh, John.
Okay, yeah, well.
You want to start, or shall I?
Well, okay, basement floors are pretty easy.
It's the walls.
Yeah, the walls are the issue. But for the floors, the Meadows Company, spelled just like a meadow with an S on the end, check them online. Take a look at Volcomp, V-O-C-O-M-P, Volcomp 20 or 25. Acrylic-based sealer, you can apply it yourself with a mop. We should do a good job of sealing the floor. It's usually available at either a lumber yard or, better yet, at a concrete products company. And I would go in and also and talk to them about their experience with the concrete sealing. Concrete block walls are really tough because they are really porous. Do you have I have a hard answer, Ken. Do you have an easy answer first?
I don't.
Well, then we'll go to the hard answer.
Of course, the easy answer is to move, but that's out of the question here.
Okay, another product you might take a look at Tad, is a company called ThoroSeal, ThoroSeal. Again, you're going to get this most likely at a concrete products company. I don't know if there's a country concrete up there or not. This is a white powder. You have a choice of white or gray. It is a silicate-based paint. And you can add mixtures to it like Acryl 60, or there's an Elmer's concrete adhesive you can add, so it will stick to the wall. It was developed as a reservoir liner, and it's fairly impermeable, and that might work and might also give you a nice-looking wall. But again, I would stop and talk to the folks at the brickyard. It is, again, something that you can apply yourself because it's basically you just mix water with it. So we're not looking at anything with hazardous chemicals or anything that is going to stink up the houses any more than the cats have already done so.
We're talking today with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg. And we'll continue to take your calls with Fred from Shorewood up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us this morning as we talk about home renovation, home repair, water, and inspection issues. And let's go to Fred in Sherwood next. Hello, Fred.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. Kind of dovetails with the last caller. Flooding here in the Milwaukee area, and two issues, trying to sanitize a basement environment for biologicals and backup sewage and mold due to the water sitting, as well as resealing and fixing up, patching up some walls that have been subjected to effervescence over the years. These are primarily brick walls with some cinder block thrown in there. What I'm looking for is sort of a recipe, and I've gone out to an EPA site and some various others, and you know, the problem that I see is that there's nothing that really walks you down. It'll say, well, use a biocide, but it won't tell you exactly what kind or how exactly to apply it. Do you use a pressure washer? What kind of mixture of biocide do you use, you know, percentage-wise, that sort of thing? You need to let the bricks dry out completely before you reapply the biocide, after you spray it, these sorts of questions. Is there any resource out there other than hiring a professional that could give you how to do this, spell it out for you?
Well, I was going to send you to the EPA, actually, Fred, because they do have some booklets and some information. I haven't looked at it in some years. I'm sorry that there isn't more in that. You may want to check the website for the City of New York Department of Health. They have a lot of information on cleanups and mold remediation. Basically, it's designed for building owners in the City of New York, and you may want to take a look at that. It is a really tough issue because the problem is you can end up spraying chemicals that are dangerous for you, and I'm. Suppose you're one of those unfortunate people who's not in a floodplain, so you didn't have flood insurance, and you got flooded anyway, like a couple of friends of mine.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's correct. So, yeah, the best is to actually hire the professionals who are out there to do it, but of course that does cost a good bit of money. So I'm afraid I can't give you too much advice. Now, resealing, I didn't quite understand the question. You've got you said you've got concrete masonry block walls with some brick. Are these interior foundation walls?
Okay, so it's an older house. It's primarily red brick, and the red brick's been crumbling over the years interior due to sort of dry rot / effervescence.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much stabilized at this point, but definitely going to need to be resealed up. I was thinking maybe hydraulic cement with some block sit over it or something like that.
So these are actually interior clay brick.
That's affirmative.
Yeah, no, we don't dare seal those. If we seal them, they're going to deteriorate really quickly. How old is your house, Fred?
Well, 20s, typical. Okay. House.
Yeah, it's a little atypical as far as the use of the bricks inside.
Construction ceramic unglazed, right? Is that what you've got?
Are these clay tile or clay brick, Fred?
Brick.
They're actually brick.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So that's a little unusual. Great. But the thing is, the reason you're getting efflorescence, Fred, is you've got moisture coming from the exterior of the house into the interior. So it's got to dry in the interior. If you seal it, what's going to happen is that soil moisture is going to stay in the brick along with the tannic acids and the other acids found in the soil, and those bricks are going to deteriorate very, very rapidly. So I think you just have to sort of let them breathe.
Well, it was sealed, and the sealant that was on there clearly has been pushed off and has crumbled off onto the floor, at least in the bottom third of the wall.
Sure.
So it doesn't seem to have increased it, but maybe that's why it's stabilized. Maybe it's breathing now.
Probably is, because the lower part of the wall is the deeper you go, the more moisture you're going to have coming through, and the more likely it is that you've got hydrostatic head pressure. So it's in a fit of self-preservation, it removed that sealant for you.
I see. So as far as sanitizing that, would you recommend not pressure washing that with a bleach solution?
You know, I don't even want to give you an answer on that, Fred. And the problem is because you've got a porous material there, and I don't know how it's going to react. I think that you are going to have to call in a professional consultant. You're going to have to call in an industrial hygienist or somebody else to come and take a look at it and be able to give you good advice. Thinking Milwaukee area, I think there's a Milwaukee office for Michaels Engineering, MICHELS, and they are a good firm who has dealt with a lot of these things. We've worked with them frequently, and I would see if you can get one of their people over to take a look at it. One of their foremost people is a fellow by the name of Wayne Baker, who works out of La Crosse office but does come to Milwaukee. And they can give you excellent advice. I on the air here, both Ken and I want to make sure we don't give you bad advice, and without actually being in the room with you, I'm sorry to punt this off to a professional, but I really think that's in your best interest.
All right. Good luck to you.
Thanks,
Fred, and appreciate hearing from you. And let's give Justin a chance in Marshfield. Hello, Justin.
Good morning. I have a question about some water that's been getting into my basement. In the past, I've had small amounts of water before, but about a month ago, we had 4 inches of rain in about an hour's time, and we had a massive amount of water in the basement. Where a lot of it's coming from is my driveway is current. I've noticed since we purchased the house, the driveway sort of slopes into the corner of where the garage and house meet, and that's where a lot of the water was coming from, that wall. I'm wondering if it would be, if it's enough to just, I'm going to repair or replace the driveway and fix the slope. Would that be enough, or should I really, while I'm doing it, be have someone dig back and properly waterproof that foundation wall?
Well, you can only hope that the driveway water is the only source. My feeling is that if you've got the money to, if once you pull the driveway out, if you have the money to dig down and waterproof the outside of the foundation, you're putting money in the bank. If you can't afford to do that, then do the driveway and see if that works. But you don't hate like you'd really not want to pull the driveway out a second time if you want to have to go around and.
If you're still getting water, then you got to pull a new driveway out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there any chance that the water table? Have you looked at the water tables? And is there a chance that the water tables raise up in wet conditions and that it's actually seeping in from below?
I don't know, I guess. How would I determine something like that?
Well, neighbors is one. Talk to some soils engineers. You could talk to probably the state of Wisconsin. University of Wisconsin keeps soils charts on pretty much every square yard of soil in the state. You might check with the soils engineers and see if they've got any information on water tables. Any other places you'd look, John?
Well, you can check with a state registered home inspector too.
Yeah,
somebody who's done some work in Marshfield for quite a few years. Mm-hmm. And most home inspectors are trained to try to figure out whether the water is surface water running in through cracks in the wall, and they can usually take a look at the pattern of the stains and give you a pretty good idea. The other thing to take a look at, Ken's right. The best thing is to dig up the house and put exterior waterproofing and drain tile, but you're looking at $60 to $70 per lineal foot, which is a lot of money. Is this an unfinished basement, Justin, or finished?
Part of it's finished. I did have to remove some carpet that had gotten saturated.
Yeah. Well, the other thing you can take a look at, if it's simply too expensive to do the outside waterproofing, which is the Class A way of doing it, is the Class B is look at putting in a water collection system inside the basement where they remove about 18 inches of concrete from the wall in and put wash gravel and drain tile on the interior of the basement, and then they put in like cactus board or dimple board to collect any water that comes down the wall. That at least controls it. Doesn't help with all the dampness and the other issues, but retrofitting a house with a real exterior waterproofing system is horrendously expensive.
Okay. Well, that clarifies things for me a bit, I guess. Thank you.
All right, good Justin, luck. Good luck to you. Thanks very much for the call. Our number is 1-800-642-1234, and our email address is talk@wpr.org. And we've got two lines open in case you have a question that you would like to ask of Ken or John. Let's go back to the phones, and Mike's in Milwaukee next. Hello, Mike.
Hi, I was in the Milwaukee monsoon about 2 weeks ago, and I have a 1930s bungalow, single family, cinder block, all the way up to the first floor. And right around the base of the cinder block, on various places in the basement, I got little rivulets started coming down. The sewer never backed up. I didn't get water collecting, like a half inch or anything like that. But there were rivulets. It's troubling because this house never used to do that. One fellow says, well, you get up on a ladder, put a hose down the drain pipe, and put some pressure under. You might be able to clean out the outside pipes underneath the soil. I don't know if that would work. But that's the problem I have at the moment.
Mike, I don't think we quite got these pipes under the soil. Do you have your gutters and downspouts running into buried drain lines?
Yes.
And do they drain to daylight someplace a distance away from the house with a half inch per foot slope?
Well, I believe they go into the storm sewer.
You better find that out. They might not. They may have gone to a cistern at one time, and that cistern may now be gone or be full, and that water could be backing up and saturating the soil. So you're probably going to have to hire a plumber who has a fiber optic set who can go down and see where those lines go.
In one portion of the basement floor, there was a crack, and a lot of water came out of there and went right down into the storm sewer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's these things about the base of the cinder blocks where it hits the floor.
Sure.
Where you get these little rivulets coming down from four, five, six different places mm-hmm. all at once.
Yeah, that's to be expected because your block, remember, are hollow. So if water is coming, let's say just 6 inches below the surface, the easiest path for it at first is just to fall through the airspace down to those bottom block. When it gets down to the bottom block, it hits the footer that the block is sitting on, and the block fills up with water. So that's why the rivulets are down there. All the water is simply going to be channeled down to that point.
Should I do landscaping then?
Landscaping can help. A half-inch slope per foot for 10 feet around the house is very helpful, but you do need to check this roof drain, because if your roof drain is supersaturating the soil, you may have some significant issues. And one of those issues can be that as soil gets wet, it increases the lateral pressure on the wall. It can end up cracking your wall and moving it out of plumb. So you do need to check those. If you find that they're clogged or if they're going nowhere underground, just put leaders off the downspouts at the surface with a good extension away from the house.
I see. Okay. I mean, I can try that stuff and see if it works.
All
hopefully
right.
We'll not get a rain like we had.
Right.
Well, hopefully we won't get 12 inches again real soon.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks very much. Ken and I were involved in that rainstorm peripherally.
Spent 13 hours at the Milwaukee airport on that day.
Yeah, waiting for the airport to open, waiting for them to get the water off the runway so the planes could land and take off. And eventually, we were able to get out of there and go on a sailing adventure. So
I have to say that hundreds and hundreds of people sleeping on the floor, all covered with the same color blanket, was kind of nice.
It was peaceful, wasn't it?
It was peaceful, yeah.
Yeah, there wasn't much moving there at all at 5 o'clock in the morning. All right, let's go to Wayne next in Iron River. Hi, Wayne.
Hi. See, I got a question about my faucets. The plumbing's been in for 30 years, and all of a sudden my faucets are starting to hammer. And I know there's air chambers by each of the faucets. Could they get, waterlogged? Or I did notice that the cold water is starting to slow down, too. I was just wondering, maybe I'm just getting a lot of minerals in my cold water line, if that could cause a difference between the hot. The hot seems to come out fast and doesn't, but it, when... Just raising the lever up and down, she wants to pound. What's going on? You got an idea?
You might have two different things going on. You might have some... occasionally, I've seen those air chambers fill up with water. And one way to check... Have you done this before, John, where you've shut the system off, shut the water lines off, opened everything up, let the water drain out, and then closed it? Have you had any luck with that?
I haven't, but
I tend to
avoid plumbing.
Yeah, well, me too, for this very reason. But you might try that just as a interim step and see if that helps. But the other thing is the faucet, your cold water faucet may be limed up and starting to not open as wide as it should as wide as it did at one point. If both the hot and cold were low pressure, I'd say pull the screen off the end of the faucet, make sure that's clean, because you might have some debris in there, some lime and other metals that have built up. You might want to do that anyway, but that's where I'd start.
Okay. Yeah, I got, because the hot water does have good pressure, so I did try draining that down like that, and it still kept doing. I drained it down the whole system, basically just loosened up some rust, and it seemed like
yeah. That does happen too, but I'll bet you that a caller will call in within the next 40 minutes or so and give us some pretty good advice on that.
Okay, well, I'll be listening.
All right, Wayne, terrific. Thanks very much for staying with us and for the call here on the Ideas Network. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction, John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting. Our guests, and we're talking about home renovation, repair, water, and inspection issues. And if you'd like to join in, the number for you is 1-800-642-1234. I did have an email prior to the show about outdoor patio bricks developing white streaks. Is it possible to remove the streaks with cleaners and solvents?
And I know John knows a lot about this too, so he can probably add to this. But my understanding is that a lot of times in patio brick and masonry, you get these little white strip, white either strips or effervescence or whatever you want to call it, that is usually from salt dissipation, isn't it? Isn't usually salt leaving, you know, sort of coming out, and it's people thought it was mold, you know, and that's usually not mold. And I think the recommended way of cleaning it is just a real mild acid solution, like a 10% muriatic acid or you know, something comparable, and then follow that up with like baking soda and water, and then a lot of rinse off, and that should do it. But be careful with any kind of harsh chemicals. What would you recommend, John?
Well, it's some sort of mineral deposition, and you're right. A light acid is going to, whether it's salt or whether it's lime or calcium carbonate, or it's going to be removed with a light acid treatment. So I think that's good, but it's probably going to reappear. So one could also just decide to live with it. One thing you might do is pull up a single brick and take a look at the bottom of the paver. If the paver is really deteriorating, then it is probably a mineral deposit. And the other possibility is that your bricks are set in lime fines so that you've got very high calcium content and that some of this is working up through the porous brick.
The other question is that if you successfully are able to get those bricks back to the original color and you wanted to paint it, is there a paint which will adhere and not just pull off when the weather gets bad?
Are you talking about for an exterior application?
Yes.
Boy, I wouldn't recommend any kind of paint to put on that surface. It's not going to last well at all because that really absorbs a lot of moisture. I think it'll push the paint off pretty quickly.
And then have
John?
A real mess.
Yeah, there are paints that would work, but you don't even want to try to use them. It's a special silicate paint, and you can order them from Germany, and I know they aren't terribly responsive. but the other thing you can do is we stain a lot of concrete now.
Talk to
a local decorative concrete person, because we pour concrete now, and we make it look like slate, we make it look like limestone, and maybe you can simply find a surface applied stain that you can apply yourself, getting it from a local dealer. That will give you the color, and it's a stain, so it'll be in the brick, and after a few years it's going to fade, but you can redo it again.
All right, back to the phones to Ian. Let's go to Ian in traffic. Go ahead.
Hey guys, I had a comment that I thought might be interesting to listeners to this program. And I also had a question. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Well, my comment is just last year when we put a master bedroom suite up in the attic of our 1935 historic Chicago bungalow, I got two pieces of advice from an architect friend of mine that were just fantastic advice. The first one was we were going to do dormers, and she says, no, don't do that. Just put skylights. And we love our skylights, our Velux skylights. They create a really nice space up there. And the second and most important piece of advice was to get this isonene insulation, I-C-Y-N-E-N-E, if you guys are familiar with that. It really just changed the entire house. I mean, like, it made the basement less drafty. It has cut my, I think my air conditioning bill is about a third of what it was last summer. And my heating is amazingly cheaper. And we don't even use the extra heating that we put in. We just, you know, the air flows up. So I thought you guys might want to comment on the importance of really good insulation, because that stuff is the best. That was the best $5,000, and then I got like $1,500 back from the government and the gas company. That was the best $5,000 I ever spent on my renovation. The second thing is we got our first daughter on the way here in a couple of weeks, and so we're thinking about redoing the basement. It's like a rumpus room, and my question is, should I definitely replace the plumbing? I don't have great water pressure, but while I'm doing that and, you know, messing with the guts of the house, do I have an imperative to replace all that plumbing down there?
Well, your house was built in the 30s, so most of your plumbing is probably galvanized pipe. Is that right?
Yeah, it sure is.
And it might be undersized or very likely undersized. Have you had updated water to the house, your water lines to the house?
I couldn't understand you.
Has your water main been has your water main been updated since the house was built?
I don't think so. No.
Okay, then that's probably, I want to say it's going to be either 3/4 or 1 inch, possibly copper at that age. So I've seen a lot of houses in the 30s that have had galvanized pipe. At half-inch size pipe coming right off of the water meter, that's undersized, and you're going to have it's going to make a huge difference in your water pressure throughout the house if you have those done. So I would have your plumber look at all of your piping down in the basement, and most of the time it's also kind of cluttered down there because people have done little projects here and there, and so the piping looks very convoluted. So that could all be cleaned up, and it's not an outrageously expensive process, especially nowadays with PEX materials, or you can do copper, that sort of thing. So I'd recommend doing that.
Well, that's great advice. I really appreciate that because, yeah, you're right. It is kind of, you know, it's in the way and all that. What about for the radiators? I have a boiler and radiators. Those pipes are in the way too. Do they replace those with PEX? Because they're the same half-inch galvanized, I believe.
This is a hot water system?
Yeah.
Yeah, with, you know, the metal radiators and a boiler.
But it's hot water, not steam.
No, it's just full of water, yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah, those are easy to do because that's a pump-driven system. Steam pipes are very difficult because they have to drain the condensate back. But on a pump system, yes, you could do that as well. You need a higher temperature pipe for that, though.
Okay. Well,
yeah, they have special
enjoying the show, guys. Thanks for your assistance.
All right, yeah, Ian. Thanks very input, much for yeah. the call. We appreciate hearing from you. And if you'd like to join in with your question, there's a line open now at 1-800-642-1234. We're talking with Ken Adams and John Freiberger here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller. Glad to have you along with us today as we talk about home renovation, repair, water, and inspection issues with Ken Adams and John Freiberger. And let's go back to the phones to John in Oconomowoc. Hello, John. John, are you with us? John, you there? Apparently not. All right. So let's go to Jeff, next in La Crosse. Hello, Jeff.
Yes. This is John La Crosse, if that's all right.
Yep.
Okay. Well, you guys touched on a little bit of what I'm looking at. Have some ponding that's kind of been happening up against a side of our garage where a basement wall kind of goes down. There's steps down our basement. So the wall has had cracks pretty much from top to almost bottom, not all the way through, and some, you know, water has come through and mold. And then now just recently, this summer, there's a storage room is there as well with a concrete floor, and the cracks have just started to develop there. So I guess I was just looking for a course of action, you know, as far as, you know, I guess cleaning, sanitizing, maybe patching, ceiling. And then on the other side, I mentioned the ponding kind of, there's some landscaping there. There is a drain from the garage roof there that does go underground. I don't see where that comes out, so I'm assuming that's an underground system, and I caught from before that maybe I consult someone to see if that's plugged up or full down there. So well, that's the first part, I guess.
Well, let's start with that one first. Yes, John, I think... As John Freiberger was saying earlier, you really want to have a drain, a storm drain exit to daylight someplace down the road, and you want to make sure that there's no chance of it backing up and saturating the ground next to the house. So that's the first thing I would take care of. I'm not exactly sure what you were saying. You've got some puddling that's developing next to the driveway, and it's putting a lot of pressure on your foundation, and that's starting to crack.
Yeah, exactly. So that wall that is leaking in the basement is you know, the ponding is right there. So I'm assuming that storm drain, you know, is obviously part of the ponding. So it just makes sense that's the source of the water and the crack and whatnot.
Yeah, probably. And if you can somehow change the grade of the driveway so that the water washes away from the house and fix that gutter, you might be in good shape. One thing about patching the cracks, if you can patch them from the outside, that's a really good way to do it. If you can't, there are some patches out there with epoxies injected in that might work for you. But just a surface like caulking or something from the inside is basically putting a Band-Aid on it, and it's really not going to do the job.
Yeah, I kind of figured it would come back through anyway, and that was the thing, even though they're very thin cracks and just surface, you know, now you space in there. I figured that was the case there, so.
Are the planes of the foundation wall changing at all, or are they pretty much at the same plane and you just have a crack?
Yeah, just a crack. I mean, it's a full concrete.
Yeah, all basements crack, so that's not a bad situation.
Crack, yet. I don't mind the water and the mold above the crack. Yeah. That's a problem.
Absolutely.
So, well, good luck. And then secondly, got some defective shingles, and while we're kind of waiting for the insurance company to quit messing around with us and not do anything, we have lost a couple shingles in the storm, a couple storms this summer. So I just wanted to know what I could do in the meantime to kind of patch that up so that we don't get any water leakage through the roof.
Well, you want to be careful because you want to make sure that this is not leaking. It could be leaking now and you're not even seeing it because...
Yeah, we just did have an inspection. There's no leaking at this point.
Is there any bare wood showing? Or is it the felt paper below the shingles that are showing?
A little bit of the felt paper.
Okay. You know... the simplest thing, if you've got a few shingles, you could slide some shingles up underneath and roof them. Can you walk on the roof, or is this something that's too steep?
No, I can walk on it.
You could do a little search and web search and see how shingles are attached. They're fairly simple, and slide some shingles. They don't necessarily have to match into position. Tack them down and hold it. That'd be one way to do it. I'm not a big fan of throwing tarps over that sort of thing.
Yeah, I wanted to avoid that exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that's a last-ditch effort if we had a big storm yesterday and you got to wait till tomorrow to have it fixed. But that's the way I'd start. Another thing you might do is get some rolled roofing and gently pry the shingles above it up and slide it underneath those shingles and then tack it around the perimeter. But you want to be very careful not to – you're sort of creating a problem by putting a lot of nails around the perimeter.
Exactly.
Because you're putting surface nails in, but at the same time you're protecting the hole, so you want to be careful that when you nail any nails in the face, you nail them nice and flat, not too hard so that they break through the roll, but not so soft that they're sticking out, because then you're creating a place for water. But you know, you get a professional roofer over there. You know, if they're going to do the roof later, they'll be happy to patch it for you now while you're dealing with the insurance situation.
Okay, yeah, thank you for your advice.
Yeah,
okay.
Good luck.
We appreciate hearing from you, Jeff. And let's go next to Laura. And Laura's in Blue River. Hi, Laura.
Good morning, Jim. I've got a mouse problem that's just kind of sprung up and is getting unbearable. I've got a 20s brick farmhouse, and it's a brick facade with the rough bricks. It's also vine-covered. And I think the mice are coming in my soffits and along the fascia board that is not really flush with those old bricks. And the soffit is old-fashioned wainscoting. And I'm thinking of getting a new metal roof put on and whether new metal soffits will prevent this problem.
Well, metal soffits don't fit all that tight. Your wainscot soffits, if they're in good repair, are actually going to be quite adequate. If the mice are indeed climbing these vines, and we've got vines over old brick, the vines really shouldn't be on the brick in the first place because they are going to hold moisture and damage the brick over the long run. But usually mice will come in where warm air is coming out. And very frequently we find that is around the foundation area and where the basement windows are. So I would get a very thorough inspection of your exterior, if you can see it through all of the vines, and look for very small holes where the mice can come in. It's very typical to have some erosion next to a basement window, and if you can stick your little finger into the hole, a mouse can get in. So I would start there. It's nice to keep things as original as possible on these old houses, but I think you may wish to consider removing the vines that are growing up on the brick.
Okay, I can kill the vines. I don't know if I can get them removed because this is not soft brick, but the rigid brick, the ribbed brick that was so common in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I want to say that I have tuck pointed the entire foundation
mm-hmm.
around everything. It's sealed really well.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think they're coming up there. They can run straight up this brick. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's that ribbed brick.
So it's the wire cut brick.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they can run up the brick. I can, like I said, kill the vines, but I just thought that maybe that metal soffit would do a better job. But because I can see up there that the wainscoting has cracks in it, big wide cracks, and that the fascia isn't flush, and you can just see it's a free-for-all, I think.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like maybe you do need some repairs up there. And if you're going to make repairs up there, really think about getting proper venting into the attic, because I'm sure your house was probably under-vented to begin with. And if you go to the coravent.com site, you'll see a lot of information on venting historic attics. It's cor-a-vent.com. Very good information, worksheets, cross-sectional drawings, and those sorts of things. And the other thing you may want to check to see if your farmhouse might be interesting enough that the State Register of Historic Places would be willing to decide that it's eligible. And if so, then the state will give you a tax credit for 25% of these repairs. And you can find that at State Historical Society of Wisconsin, and then click on Homeowner Tax Credits.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for your help.
All right, thank you very much. We had an email from Steve who said he was starting to repaint his house. He found that the vents under the eaves are mostly painted over by a previous owner and wants to replace them. They're all 1-inch round vents and wondering if he should replace them with the same size, or the other thought, replacing at least a third of them with something bigger, such as 3-inch round vents. What would you recommend?
Well, just what we just recommended to our friend in Blue River. Go to coravent.com, download the worksheets, figure out how much venting you need, and then go from there. Continuous venting is certainly the best way to vent any attic. Ken is nodding his head yes here.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of ways that knowledgeable contractors can work out putting in continuous venting. But take a look at coravent.com, good consumer information, and then work out a plan after you've done the calculations.
Let's go to Mike in Argyle next. Hello, Mike.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I was calling to see, I have an old house that's definitely over 100 years old, but it's got a dirt floor basement in it. And I was just curious if there was anything a guy could do to, I guess, make it a little healthier if you'd cover that dirt floor with plastic, or if a guy should just leave it alone, or what you'd recommend.
Do not leave it alone. You could be getting a great deal of moisture in your house due to moisture coming in through that dirt floor. In fact, in many cases when we have houses that are too wet, as we find that the unvented dirt floor crawl spaces and those areas are the number one producer of moisture. You can simply put plastic over the floor. It's not terribly useful. What you may want to take a look at is putting in 2 to 3 inches of a concrete slab there. And that would give you an opportunity to put plastic underneath the concrete. And depending upon the depth of the basement, you might even want to put some insulation underneath the concrete.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a window that they can get a chute through, it shouldn't be terribly expensive to cement this basement. Just, of course, make sure that you're not going to be making any changes to the plumbing waste system, which is underneath the floor.
There's one other thing, too, and he's probably got some center posts in the floor, and if he does, he's going to want to either put those on a steel plate on top of the concrete put concrete pads underneath it.
Right,
or
good
change
point.
Them to steel posts.
Yeah, don't pour concrete around wooden columns because
we
they
fix
will.
Them. We fix them all the time.
Yep.
People that have done that, they rot out.
Does that help, Mike?
That does. I've always wondered, so I appreciate that. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you very much. I had another email from MK who recently saw and asked this old house an episode regarding the dangers of venting bathroom fans out a soffit. If the soffit is vented to allow air exchange to a ridge vent, this describes exactly the situation on my 9-year-old home. Any comments on that in the next 30 seconds?
It sounds like she's got a vent that's venting exhaust and it's coming back into another vent. Well, that's not a good thing. So the best bet would be to vent it either straight out a sidewall that's got unrestricted access to the environment, or straight up out the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Does that
sounds good?
Yeah.
We're talking with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, specializes in residential renovation projects, and John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg consults for historic restoration projects, water and mold litigation, and is a Wisconsin registered home inspector. I'm Jim Packard. We'll be back on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller, and happy to have you along with us today. We're talking about home renovation issues with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg. And if you'd like to join in, the lines are full at the moment, but the number is 1-800-642-1234. And we'll go right back to the phones to Mia in Concord next. Hello, Mia.
Hi. You were talking about using paint or to paint on bricks.
Yes.
And I've used artist acrylic and I've used artist oil. And I used a primer on my cinder blocks and I painted fieldstone to match the barn. And I've also used the acrylic to paint red bricks because they had faded and then there was some acid on there. So I let it kind of, I put it on very thick. But I've had very good luck. It's withstood. It gently fades through the years, but I've had very good luck with it.
Well, that's terrific. Is this on a vertical surface or horizontal?
It's a sidewalk. It's a cement sidewalk with brick trim on the side, so mm-hmm. It's flat. And I've had to, we've mowed over it, and it has withstood for several years.
Terrific.
I've had very good luck.
What kind of primer did you say you used?
On the cinder block, I just used regular house paint primer. Because I was concerned that the blocks were so porous, I didn't want all the paint to soak in.
Mm-hmm.
So that worked. And it just gently fades.
Well, that's interesting to know. Thank you.
Yep.
Yes.
Thank you very much for the information, Mia. We appreciate hearing from you.
Hmm.
And let's try Bob in Lancaster next. Bob, what's on your mind today?
Yes. My house was built in 1960 and has some foundation walls have concrete block. And on one of the concrete blocks, the bottom has largely crumbled, and it's got a 2-inch by 3-inch hole, exposing the inside where it's, the hollow part of the concrete block. I'm wondering, what is the best way to mend, try and repair that?
Probably with a concrete grout, Bob. You should be able to go to your local, there isn't a local brickyard in Lancaster. You're probably going to end up being down in Mineral Point or Platteville, but get what's called a non-shrinking grout. Basically, you're just going to mix it with water, pack it in there, and it is going to set rather rapidly, and it won't shrink, and it should be a nice, neat patch for you.
How about, have you heard of water plug hydraulic cement?
Yeah, I have. I think a non-shrink grout is sort of more of a professional thing, and you're certainly going to be able to get it easily at any brickyard.
All righty. Well, thank you.
Okay, Bob. Good luck to you. Thanks very much for the call. And let's try Steve in Woodman next. Hi, Steve.
Hello. How you doing?
Good.
I have a question. My house was built in the 90s, early 90s, and it has an asphalt shingle roof, and I have probably three different pitches, nothing less than 412. Except for where it goes over this porch. It's probably half of that. It's like an add-on porch. And we get lots of snow here and lots of rain. I live in the middle of a forest. And sometimes in the winter, it snows a lot, and then it thunderstorms on top. And I get a glacier all the way up my roof, and it's pretty thick. And I had bad leaking in the ceiling and stuff in the house. So I put roof cables on, and that cured it for a while. But I think I should put a metal roof on so there's less seams or cracks for the ice to get underneath. And I was wondering, should I get a steel roof or an aluminum roof? And should this kind of roof, metal roof, be grounded for lightning? And would you go with screwed-on or with the rolled seams? And is it possible, because I have a vaulted ceiling in the part of the house, to put insulation board in between the boards they put on to screw the metal to, you know, to mm-hmm. fill that gap, or should that be left open to the air?
Okay. Well, let's see if we can answer some mm-hmm, of those
sure.
questions here.
Okay, first, as far as adding insulation, there is a company, the Cornell Company here in Wisconsin, I think with one L, mm-hmm. I think they have a website, makes all kinds of retrofit roof boards. So basically, you take the old shingles off, and then you order the thickness of foam that you want with the new underlayment bonded to the foam, and you basically nail or screw that down to the existing roof. They make it without an airspace, and they make it with an airspace. Talk to your roofing installer and manufacturer and ask them whether they require the airspace for warranty, because you'll find most of your asphalt shingle people will. I don't know about the roofs. Whether it is steel or aluminum, it really doesn't make much difference. What the quality of the finish, a Kynar finish or others, are what you're looking for, a good quality finish with a good warranty from a company that's been around for a while. You really don't want the type that are screwed down with little plastic grommets, because after 10 to 15 years, they start failing. You want what's called a standing seam. And I think that's what you meant by a ribbed roof, where the fasteners are all completely hidden. But considering it sounds like if you're up there in the Northwoods and getting a lot of snow and rain, this is probably a wise investment for you. It is going to be expensive, but It may do the trick, and you can update your attic to or your roof system to R50 or more with the use of the Cornell panels, and have something that you shouldn't have to worry about for 30 years.
Are these people able to flash successfully around the skylight and chimneys, like for a wood stove, where you have those stainless steel chimneys come on your
roof? Oh, yes, yes. Now there are complete systems for in all the better roofing companies. Just make sure you get a company that has done it before,
okay. Because
there aren't a lot of them out there. You really want to do a little bit of consumer protection. You want to do some investigation. You want to see the warranty. The warranty needs to be not just from the roofer, but it needs to be from the manufacturer of the roofing. You want to check references. You want to check with Ag and Consumer Protections to make sure there's no complaints against this person. I don't know if roofers are on what's the list?
Angie's List?
Yes, on Angie's List yet. But do a lot of investigating. Make sure you get somebody who's very knowledgeable, because this is going to be a big investment. It's going to be a near-lifetime investment for you. So you really want it to go well for you.
What do you think of aluminum versus steel?
I don't. It's really the finish and the application that is most important. You're going to find various mill thicknesses of both of them available, and you should probably get on the web and do a little bit of reading. You will find a multitude of roofing manufacturers that have good websites, and visit several of them. And before you start talking to roofers, make sure that you know as much as they probably will.
Yeah, I live in southwestern Wisconsin in Grant County. Where can I go to get information on roofers? Where do I start?
In Grant County, let's see. I can think there are roofers in Prairie du Sac and Madison, and you may have to check them. I don't know of anyone in Platteville or Mineral Point. I think you're probably you may have to do a Yellow Pages search for roofers and metal roofs. And if you want, feel free to email me at frei@chorus.net. And I do have references on a lot of roofers who, many of whom do metal roofs. because there are a couple of them out there that you really don't want.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Okay. Yeah, and we're not going to mention those names on the air, but you'd certainly be happy to talk to you privately.
So, Steve, trust, then verify is the answer for you. Thanks very much for the call. Good luck to you. And let's go to Steve in Wood County next. Hello, Steve.
Hi.
What can we do for you today?
Yeah, I got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've got water in my basement, and it's coming around the hole basement where the floor meets the block.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I live in town, and I've got a 1940s house.
And is it does it come in regularly? Or
every time we get a real good heavy downpour.
Yeah, it sounds like you're in a real good position to have the internal drain tile installed. We had discussed this a little bit earlier. You may or
I wish I would have heard that.
Well, then we'll repeat it because it's good information. What these people do is they will come into your basement and cut about a 18-inch trench all the way around the perimeter of the basement, and they'll install a sump pit in some predetermined location, and then put drain tile and some either pea gravel or something of that nature in, so that moisture can move through it quickly to the drain tile, and then they'll seal it back up for you with concrete, and that will create a sump system right inside the foundation. So every time the water table moves up to that level, it'll drain to the sump pump, and the sump will spit it out.
Okay, now let me get this straight.
Okay.
You're talking about actually cutting a hole through the floor all the way around the walls.
Yes, it usually happens about a foot in from the outside walls, because there's a footing that
right.
You want to avoid.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then I've heard of places where they just score around the bottom and make a little trench in the concrete. Have you heard that way of doing it?
I don't know anything like... you mean so that the water will actually sit on the surface of the concrete and drain towards some low location?
Yes, that will go around the walls. The floor, and then gather in a sump pump.
Sure. I mean, how do you use your basement now?
Normal basement. Nobody's living down there.
Do you think you could live with water continually draining around a little trench around the perimeter?
I get what you mean. You know, I've been thinking about this too.
I don't know the system that you're talking about. It seems to me that it's not ideal because you've got water, you know, moving around the perimeter. What if you throw a cardboard box on the floor, your shoes or something, all of a sudden you've got water that's on the surface being soaked up by your
mm-hmm.
stuff. And so I would think that you would be much happier with a drain tile system. It's not that expensive. So you
mm-hmm.
might want to have a couple of people look at that system for you, give you some ideas on what it would cost, and you might be pleasantly surprised.
Well, that's great. Now, who would where in the Yellow Pages would you look to find a person that would do that kind of work? What would I look under?
You could start with basement waterproofing.
Okay.
That might be a good start. Basement foundation. Sometimes they might not advertise clearly for that, but they do that work as a sideline. Some concrete contractors in your area might do that.
Mm-hmm.
You could also do a web search with your zip code in and, you know, like a 20-mile radius or a 30-mile
mm-hmm.
radius and see what you can find.
Yeah. Now, the way that I was mentioning it was where they just cut a small trench into the floor, put a plastic cover over, a plastic cover, and then that, like you said, the water would just drain from all the way around the basement into the sump.
Well, you know, that might work, and you might find after you're all done that you don't want to spend the money on the drain system. That's, you know, sounds like the...
So that isn't a common way of doing it?
I've never seen it done.
Really?
No.
Well, that's nice to know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hey, thanks, bud.
Yeah.
Okay,
thanks a lot for
the call, Steve, and good luck to you.
Yeah, one thing we should mention, since we talk about these drain systems a lot, is we should probably just mention radon a little bit.
Mm, yes.
And I don't know what Wood County is like as far as radon, but I think that... it'd probably be a good idea for people to do a little radon testing. And so if Steve up there has got some radon in his house and he puts in the sump system, he's going to want to have a sealed system with a fan on it to make sure that if he has existing radon, it's actually lower, because I don't want people to put these in and suddenly have hot basements, as they say. So, you know, getting a few radon tests at the local hardware store, or better yet, if you've got the time, do a 6-month Alpha Tracker test, probably be a real good idea for all these folks that we keep recommending the system to.
If you do have high radon, you could utilize the system to help move the radon out of the house if you could vent it through the roof.
Exactly. In that case, you know, like let's say Steve's house got higher radon, it's a much better system for him to do the in-floor vented system than to do this trench sort of system, because he's going to be working on two problems at once.
Yeah.
Here's an email from Mike. In the winter, my bathroom vents let in a lot of cold air. Are there any bathroom vents that don't allow air to enter the house?
Well, probably what's happening with your vent is that there's a little flapper, usually on the outboard side of the unit, the ceiling unit, mm-hmm. that when you turn the vent on, it opens up. Now, I've seen a lot of these over the years where they just get stuck in the open position. So you might be able to shut the system off, you know, kill the power to it, open it up and see if that little flapper is open. You can do that by removing the light bulb. Sometimes there's a screw that you unscrew. If you're uncomfortable doing that, you could ask a heating contractor or an electrician to do that, and they'd be happy to take care of it for you for a nominal sum. Mm-hmm. That's the first place I'd look.
The other thing, some systems have two flappers, and the second one is up on the little hood up on the roof. Like
right.
A Brone 624 will have a flapper in it, and those can jam open.
So you could have two of them. Yeah.
Right, and so if you got up on the roof and just got down, got your nose down there with a flashlight or felt in there, if that was gone, you could pretty easily just replace that yourself, and then you'd have at least one flapper in the system.
Mm-hmm. Or sometimes just stick a little a pencil in there and just knock it loose, and sometimes they hyperextend.
Well,
if you're comfortable on the roof.
Well, and then there's other days where you go in there, and that's where it's open because that's where the hornets built their nest.
Or the birds, as this one house.
So be a little careful.
Good luck.
Another person, Susan, said our home was built in 1910. It's a church parsonage and has old stone concrete walls in the basement. What can we use to seal the walls that will stop them from crumbling and from getting damp in rainy weather?
Nothing. They are meant to breathe. If you have loose mortar, I'd be happy to send you the recipe for a repair mortar that you can use. But basically, if you seal these walls, the person who had the clay brick in the basement, the walls would deteriorate much more rapidly. Take a look at your drainage on the outside. Slope things as best you can. Get your downspouts mm-hmm. away. And that is really about the best you're going to be able to do.
All right, let's go back to the phones to Will in Granger. Hello, Will.
Hi, guys. Hey. I have an interesting question for you. Okay, I have a house that was built about 1865, 1866 out of burr oak that they cut when they cleared the land. Okay, and they built it on limestone foundation, so it's kind of petrified. All the plaster in the house is all falling down, so I just knocked the rest of it down. I was going to put drywall up, but now I can't get a screw in this stuff.
Yeah, that's because it's burr oak. You're going to have to either pilot drill or you could put sleepers on the inside, then you could power nail the sleepers to the inside of the, furring basically to the inside of the studs.
Okay, I tried the pilot drill thing, and now I got two broken drill bits in the wall too.
Yeah, yeah. That's the beauty of the wood is... I mean, it's very strong and stout, and the hard part is working it. So I would say the simplest thing, there's channels. I think there's some metal channels that you could purchase that you could power nail those to the studs, too, and that wouldn't give you an extra depth of wall. You might like the extra depth for the wall, too, if it's, to add more insulation, so...
Oh, yeah, I'm planning on soundproofing the whole place because I got three teenage boys.
Well, it's noisy there.
You know, what you want to do is give them each a screwdriver and tell them to put the drywall up. You know, you'll get a good night's sleep out of them.
Yeah. Yeah, the hard part is getting them to pick up the screwdriver, right?
Yeah, or hearing you, basically.
Yeah.
Will, thank you very much, and good luck to you. Appreciate hearing from you. And Brian is up next in Green Bay. Hello, Brian.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I live up in the Appleton area, and when the hailstorms came through, we had gotten some hail damage. I had the insurance adjuster come out to take a look at it, and the siding on our house is probably about 30 years old, and it's aluminum. And when he looked at it, he said that there wasn't dents from the hail, but the hail had hit the paint and knocked off the oxidation that builds up over time.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that's common, first off?
Yes, it is. And there's a lot of paints that are formulated for aluminum siding. So if you don't like the color of your house, you can change it to anything you want. Just make sure that you use one that is formulated for aluminum siding and be careful to watch the preparation instructions because they may want you to wash the oxidation off of the house before you paint it. Or, of course, you know, as hire a professional as well.
Okay. Now, as far as cleaning it off, one of the suggestions was like power washing. I think I remember hearing things on this show in the past about being cautious with that, not to get moisture behind the, up, you know.
Yeah, we don't know what the water, what's kind of water barrier is on your house behind the siding. So, but I think do a little bit of investigation on paints and what you need to do as far as preparation. And you may find that hand scrubbing and rinsing is really going to make the, is going to make the best sense.
Okay, and then a second question real quick is that while we've got this going on, we figured that it might not be a bad time to update some of our windows also.
Mm-hmm.
Any opinions about replacement as a place, or like new construction windows as opposed to, you know, replacement windows quality-wise?
Brian, tell me again, how old is your house?
I believe it was built in the 70s, early right. 70s.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it's like old casement or double hung windows with no insulation really to them at all.
Yeah, boy, seventies are so transitional. I think some of the worst houses ever built were from the '70s, weren't they, Ken?
Yeah, it was right at the end of all the really beautiful old Doug fir lumber, and just as windows were starting to be developed.
Well, and then insulation was changing so rapidly, and vapor control wasn't, and we had a lot of overtight houses.
My sense is that it would be really smart for Brian to look at if he can salvage his existing interior trim to replace the entire windows.
I think you're probably right, but I'm almost thinking of going a little further than that, Ken.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering what kind of air barrier and water barrier is on the exterior of that house. And the nice thing about aluminum siding is you can take it off and put it back on.
Yeah.
And so you could actually change the sizes of your windows a little bit. And a good siding contractor, you know, don't make them smaller because it's hard to stretch aluminum, but you could make them bigger. But you may want to, if you're... You know, I think you may want to think about having an energy audit done. Have a blower door test done. Let's say your house is really pretty leaky. Let's use this as an opportunity to not only replace the windows, but maybe you've got a lot of leaks through the walls as well. So consider this sort of a 40-year checkup on the house and maybe kill many birds with one stone and lower your long-term heating costs and increase your comfort.
Great idea.
Do you have any idea of what something like that runs?
Oh, they're not expensive at all. I want to say the last time I had it done was, I think, about $400, and they came out twice. They came out in the beginning of the project and at the end.
You're looking at probably $250 to $400. Check to see whether there are any tax credits for that. I don't think there are right now.
Brian,
but for some of the work on the house, there would be.
Brian, thanks so much for the call. We've run out of time. I'm sorry we can't get to Jane and Ron and all of the other callers as well. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison specializes in residential renovation projects. You can find out about him at your website, adamsofmadison.com, correct?
Yep, that'll get us there.
And if you want to get a hold of John Freiberger, you simply go to Frei, F-R-E-I, at chorus.net. They'll be back in 2 months. Take more of your calls. We'll do this again next month. And coming up tomorrow on Garden Talk, Bob Tomisch, Senior Lecturer in Horticulture at the UW-Madison. I'm Jim Packard. Thank you for listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.